I just came back from the salon, and for the record, I went with a sassy little bob and quiet luxury shade of blonde. Yes, that's literally what we're calling it, quiet luxury. Aside from trips to the salon, I don't actually blow out my hair. My hair is naturally wavy, and that's why I love Way. Way's new anti-frizz cream is a lightweight cream that provides immediate frizz control that lasts for up to 72 hours. I know that I have a limited amount of time with wet, wavy hair in which to get myself in order. And that is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It has notes of bergamot, Italian lemon, violet, and more. And it smells unbelievable. Truly, as someone who is a little bit sensitive to scents, I put this in my hair and I feel great. It also genuinely pairs well with my perfume, which I appreciate. I don't blow out my hair because after years of color processing and attempting to make it straight, I know it looks better and stays healthier when I avoid blow drying, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. I've used products, especially with wavy hair, where it feels heavy and looks kind of wet. And that's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream, because it enhances the natural waves in my hair. I still look like me, just a little elevated. And P.S., I am way obsessed with Way's other bestsellers. Their leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, my personal favorite. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com with promo code Andy. I got us a dinner reservation so you can take several seats.
As a gay, I love the rainbow. But my favorite color is off.
Okay, wait, can I just say, like, first off, your tagline was so much better than mine, but also, I decided in the moment to emphasize every single word, which was a choice that I made that did not make any sense.
A strong choice.
I got us a dinner reservation so you can take several seats. It was just like the whole, I was bringing it down.
A strong choice, a bold choice.
Thank you. It was an Alto's Reckoning, I guess, or something. Anyway, you guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 312. And we might have ourselves a little bit of a kooky, crazy episode. I think you and I are both like a little extra zesty today.
Very much. Very much. Y'all, we were discussing like my returns to Andy's Girls. Like in the lockdown era, I was like feeling all the things. I think I did one whole episode that was basically you all being therapy for my mental health. And I'm past all of that.
They're used to
like
that with me, number
nonsense-y
one.
And nonsensical. So off we go.
I am here for it. I just realized I have a stain on my shirt
because
I sauteed some mixed vegetables and apparently I poured them over my body before eating them for dinner. And it is, in fact, a white shirt.
There is an entire country song that starts with, I had a barbecue stain on my white t-shirt. So I just assumed that you were like, it's either Kenny Chesney or one of those, you know, vaguely people.
Can I also just say, I don't remember the name of this company, but it's an actress. I forgot her name as well. Apologies. But like, it's a shirt that says, like, I have one shirt that says feeling shitty. And this one in cursive, it's like a cute little white tee. And then it says overwhelmed.
Oh my gosh.
Like in cursive, which I'm into. It's like a little reveal.
I also love because like the fonts like juxtapose to the sentiment.
Yes.
Because it's like calligraphy.
Yeah, it's like very pretty. And then that feeling shitty one is also very pretty.
Why does that fit you perfectly? Like overwhelmed but fancy. Like why does that seem like exactly right?
It's kind of my brand.
It is.
I have to say, is like chaotic cursive. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Chaotic cursive. Stop it. She's gonna come for you for brand like infringement.
Oh God, would love to see it happen with a L A and then apostrophe L A apostrophe.
Of course.
Chaotic
la.
Cursive is. They're like is la is la is is where we are. We're just at la. So listen, I'm in New York in the cloth. You're in L A.
In the
Zoomy Zoom.
Yep.
In the apartment. What do we have a name for your place of residence? Does it have a fancy name?
Our residence doesn't have a name, but our courtyard has the Jennifer Hudson Gate. And it is called that because, so for those of you listening at home, hi. We live in an adorable little like Melrose Placey. There's like 7 units on the bottom, 7 up top. It's a horseshoe. Oh. So it's a cute little like courtyardy place. We know everybody. But it was open to the street. And then Jennifer Hudson was shooting an Adam Sandler movie for Netflix. They shut down our entire street. They paid us all to like put lights in our apartments. And then we discovered that all she did in the scene that they used our apartment complex for was to walk out of an upstairs unit, down the stairs, out and get into a car. No lines. But y'all, for this Netflix movie, they built a gate to match the stair railing ironwork. And then when they left, they left it. And so it didn't lock forever and ever. And then our building owner like put a lock on it. So we have a fancy gate that Jennifer Hudson built. So literally we call it the Jennifer Hudson Gate.
I'm very into this. This might also explain why Netflix fired literally everyone who's ever worked at Netflix, because they were shitting money in this way.
I came home the night they were shooting, and we've talked about, like, you know, I've produced a number of indie films, and, like, what they paid us to use our apartments, and they shut down our entire street. There was easily 50 crew members. There was, like, an SUV that she was sitting in and waiting, and all of this just to get one exterior shot to walk down the stairs and get in a car with no dialogue. I thought... it cost as much for you to do this tonight as it did for me to make my entire last movie. Definitely.
Oh.
And so now they fired all the black people, people of color, and queer people from Netflix. But, you know, we have a Jennifer Hudson Gate. So balance, I guess.
Yeah, they literally fired all of the departments that were focused on, like, marginalized
stories.
Anyway,
yep,
Netflix, I would say something mean, but I, like, love you guys.
I know. I was like,
so, like,
I'm not.
I don't know.
I'm not going
terrible.
Anywhere. Heartstopper broke my heart. I'm still watching The Things. I, like, did all of, like, the Not Even Bravo stuff. I'm like, I watch all of their reality shows as well. It's fine.
I think also Netflix did a little bit of a Peloton moment. And also, even though we are Zooming, a little bit of a Zoom thing where I know that Netflix is different because, like, they were the streaming giant and now they're battling, like, a bunch of other giants. But also, everybody used them during COVID, during peak quarantine. And even though we are still in the COVID days,
correct.
We're at a different chapter. We're at a different point. So all these companies that were like killing the game have to sort of reacclimate to a new standard, I guess.
Also, and not to fall down the rabbit hole too far, but like because of how many international teams they have and how much they increase the content creation in local markets in other countries instead of just like farming our content out. I think it's just how the budgets exploded and like they made those $100 million deals with people. And like at some point you have to be like, oh, wait, this costs a lot.
Well, you know what? I'm a generous person. If they want to throw me a couple $100K, you don't even need to get to the 7th digit. If they want to do a collab, listen, maybe I should introduce you because we're about 15 minutes in and
like,
I feel like...
Who is this rainbow gay?
Listen, he happens to be one of my favorite people. Actor, producer, director. You know his recent work producing and starring in A Very Sordid Wedding and Southern Baptist Sissies, both streaming on Amazon. He's got some big news coming that we were chatting about that I'm really excited about. And of course, Bravoholics know him from The People's Couch. Welcome back, Emerson Collins.
Thank you. You know, I love it. I love it here. I love your listeners. You have one of the best communities. Like, literally, I was saying before, y'all, I was like, it's like my quarterly check-in. Like, how are you? What are things? Like, what are our, like, general? And I look forward to it so much. So, like, thrilled to be here. Hey, caller. And people still talk about the show. I was at DragCon all weekend and we still get people, bless their hearts, who are like, is it coming back? I'm like, y'all, no. It's been so long.
How were you told? How long ago was the People's Couch on?
2017.
That's not that long ago.
Five years ago. But, you know, it's like we did a whole lot of things and then we sat at home for 2 years. So it also feels like it could have been 2004. I don't know.
Oh, I hear you. But did they tell you when a show isn't going to proceed to another? How does that work?
We actually did because our production company knew because they pressed, you know, for a pickup. So like, no, there was not like an official. It's that thing where Bravo doesn't put out press releases about it. But the production company does or doesn't know, you know, are you picking up? Are we going forward? Because are we moving this team on to other projects? So like you do always know, even when people act like, well, we never heard him. I mean, you do. Maybe they didn't call. And it's fine. Wait, can I announce it here as well? We didn't discuss this. I am starting a campaign to be a moderator at BravoCon.
Oh, like, are you?
Yes. Well, because like, okay, they're not going to have a People's Couch panel. Let's be real. We're like the R-list celebrities of Bravo. But like, I want to moderate a panel. You know, it's like it should be y'all, you big podcasters. But like, that would be a good use for us. So I'm telling you all here, I'm about to start harassing Bravo PR because I want to go.
First off, I'd love to see it. Number two, I bet there will be a podcast panel and it will be entirely probably like white gay men.
The men.
And it's going to be to talk about women's stories. Story. It's going to be called like women's storytelling.
Correct.
And brought to you. It's going to be, I can't wait.
By white gay men.
Brought to you by white gay men. So I can't wait to listen to guys talk about
I can't
women's
wait
stories.
To hear your podcast about the podcast panel featuring white gay men talking about women's stories on a predominantly women watch network.
You know what? You're probably going to be the guest for that episode. Let's keep it real.
Please do, because I will talk about how I could not convince anyone to let me moderate a panel. And you can talk about how the biggest podcasters in the Bravo universe are women. And you know, we've talked. I love the guys that do podcasts. It's just
everybody's amazing.
That it doesn't end up balanced.
Not usually. Yeah, there's not usually a lady presence there. It's not usually.
I mean,
you know.
Honestly, in my own journey, I have thought more about the way I talk about the women on Bravo because of the way women podcasters have like discussed the way gay men talk about women on Bravo. Like we're all growing together.
In what way? What way have you...
just like early on, you know, Kate Casey and some people have talked about, you know, there's a way that we can discuss that can head towards misogyny, because even though we're gay men, and try to keep it, you know, away from those kind of things. That's all.
Yeah, I think it's like one of those things that I don't know that the network typically thinks about, and it's, you know, it's ultimately their responsibility.
yes.
So it's or their opportunity rather.
Of course.
You know,
yes.
Ideally. So I think that's going to be the most interesting part. And it will be like a fight to the death, I'm sure.
Oh, yes.
Because everybody wants to do something.
Of course.
And I feel like content creators since COVID. You know, back in the day, I did a little Le Bebe, like mini event with Bravo Betch and Faces by Bravo at BravoCon OG. But like, I don't know what they're going to do. I have no information, nothing about nothing. And I'm sure that there is a lot of conversation going on behind the scenes about how to even steer this ship between like celebrity fans, people who are faces of various networks owned by NBC Universal, content creators and everything else. It's going to be a shit. And media.
It's also, though, like moderating and hosting are actual talents. You know, people sort of take that for granted. Like being famous is not the same thing as you can be famous and be a good interviewer. But it's like, as you know, podcast hosting is harder than people think. It's not just talking. It's like driving a conversation and moderating is the same way. And I hope it just lands in the hands of like skilled people, people who understand the network, the stars, the audience, like what people want out of the experience, you know, because there are more than enough people if you get the right people.
Yeah, and it would be nice, you know, if some of those people were genuine members of the community, super stands, which I think they actually did a really good job of the first go around. Like I had Evan Real on, who is with Page Six. And when he moderated a panel, he moderated a producer's panel at BravoCon. He was with, I think he said, The Hollywood Reporter. And I told him this when he was on AG recently. I still remember his panel. He was a fantastic moderator. And I remember sitting in my fucking seat thinking, like, he gets it. And he, you know, you wouldn't necessarily know by somebody being with a large media institution, if it's, you know, not Deadline, but if it's like the Hollywood right, Reporter or something else, you wouldn't necessarily know if that person was in and of themselves a Bravo-holic. And so to see someone like Evan who got it, who knew all the jokes, yes. who understood the audience, that yes. was great.
That and that's all great. It needs to be is people that have the depth of knowledge to understand the right questions, the right boundaries, the right places to push, the right places to like have fun. Absolutely. So that we all get to live vicariously through the content, I'm sure, as I watch it on Instagram like I did last time. It's fun.
Well, I mean, the one thing that I will have to say is for those of us who attended the first go-around, we truly had no idea what to expect. And I don't remember when the itinerary was released. I think it was relatively late in the game. People truly didn't know what this was going to be like. We knew it wasn't going to be like Firefest, but we didn't know
right.
what it was going to be. And every single person I connected with about this, myself included, was blown away. It was honestly, and from an event producer perspective, it was impeccable. This yeah. upcoming year is going to be even bigger because they're at the Javits Center, which yes. is fucking huge yes. here in New York City. So not that anybody needs, if you want to go, you're going regardless. But just to say, I think everybody really truly got their money's worth. They did an incredible job. Yeah. They well, really did.
And I'm just thrilled for the expansion because like I literally could not get a ticket. You know, I mean, they sold out in like 20 minutes couldn't. Or whatever yeah. that morning. So it's exciting that they understand the demand. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited to see how it meets it.
What would your ideal panel be? Would it be a show? Would it be a concept? If they said to, if Bravo came to you, if Susie Bravo knocked on, or rather William Bravo knocked on your door and said, you, Emerson Collins, get to choose whomever you want to speak to about whatever you want. It could be a theme or a show, whatever. What would your pick be?
If we go like make my own, I would love a producer's panel because I have produced in both TV and film. And as a fan, the unique challenges of like dealing with the cast and the network and the stories, like I feel like there's a lot of misunderstanding, I think, from fans about what production does and doesn't do. You know, we blame production, right? Like, oh, they pushed that story, they whatever. And I think the great producing of the best seasons of the show require a lot of like wiring down that down the middle. And I think the more we hear from them about how they build the shows, how they build the season, the process of shooting, and then figuring out what, you know, that hearing that articulated, I think would enlighten a lot of people. Because I often see stuff that it's like, oh, production. And I'm like, that's not how production works. Like, that's not, production can't, you know, do the thing that you have decided they can, et cetera. And I just love that part of it.
Is there a particular moment from any franchise or a season or an episode arc where you just have so many questions about behind the scenes of like, how did you navigate X and Y, if that's a situation or a
there's,
housewife?
I think anytime there's been a big explosion, right? Like I think the Monique and Candace thing.
Yes.
You know, like I think the moments where production had to pull back and show production. You know, it's like, what is it like as a field producer standing beside an argument occurring, right? Because you're all standing around an argument. And what do you do in how to intervene? Because these are grown-ups making grown-up choices, and technically you're not responsible, but also you don't just want to watch bad things happen. I feel like hearing a lot of the insight behind some of those biggest moments, you know, I think of like even Portia Family Matters with the family down there. I'd be really fascinated to hear from field producers about the experience of being the one on the ground when a like sort of quote unquote crisis is occurring, you know, because somebody has to go jump or don't, right? Mm-hmm. That's a lot of responsibility.
Who's outside mowing your lawn?
I know.
Right now?
Sorry. Like, suddenly he walked right up to the window. Hey.
For a second, I was like, oh, this is going to be fun for the listeners. And I'm sure they're not going to give me feedback.
I know. Be like, y'all, it's me. It's my fault. Did he go far enough away? Because he walked right up and now he's gone.
Yeah, I think he had some questions about Erica versus Sutton, and then he realized we hadn't gotten to that part of AG quite yet. So
understandably.
He went around the corner.
Also, they only come like every 2 weeks. So, of course, they're here right now. On the
That's every
Thursday.
Every day of my life. I haven't ordered something, but FedEx is downstairs ringing the door for another apartment that's not home. And as I almost always am, it happens in the middle of recording.
Also,
they
definitely have you marked as the call, like she's always home person. They definitely mm-hmm. have in their system. Oh, check with Sarah. Like, definitely.
Yeah, they know.
Like, if they're not home, buzz her. She's always home.
And I'll... I'll always let them in because I'm like, there's a 3% chance this is for me. Yeah. And it isn't, but, you know, there's still an opportunity. There's still potential.
I hope all your neighbors are grateful for that service, you know, that you provide to the building.
You know what's so interesting? Tori Healy Lisi, love of my life, who decorated my apartment with Studio Piccolo. Yes. She was here one day and she said, you know, your neighbors are all so mean. And I was like, they are. All of the beloved OGs have moved out as rents have exploded. And it's all these fucking young fuckers, yes, whose parents are footing the bill, yes, who like party. And this is an elder. This is like almost a retirement community at, yes, this point. I've been here for a decade. Like, settle down. This is, you should not be speaking because the walls are thin. Just be quiet and take off your shoes when you walk in.
Yes.
And just go lay down. Just, correct, lay down for a year. Just lay down.
It's fine.
Just lay down.
I know.
This is the world.
I'm like a Pollyanna about people. Like, I want everyone you meet to be wonderful and like give them the chance to be wonderful until they're not. We had these people move into our building during the pandemic and I'm like, hi, we're across the way. I'm Emerson. Like, we're not, you know, no one can go anywhere. And they've just been terrible. Yeah. Terrible. Like, sounds and loud and whatever. And they've just moved out, like, 2 weeks ago. And there's been a very, like, ding-dong, the witch is dead quality about, like, literally everyone else in the complex for the last 2 weeks. It's sort of hilarious. Because we were all, like, trying. But it was like, you're ruining it. There's so few of us. And you're ruining it.
It makes you wonder what it must be like to be, like, at the table next door to, yeah, the table of housewives arguing. Like, the women on New Jersey sat on an after show that when Teresa, you know, rocked that table over in Nashville, wine got all over other people, private diners who were just covered in God only knows what, Cabernet or whatever else. I mean, that's got to suck a little bit. If you're not a Bravo fan, if
that's,
you are,
the thing,
it's
like,
it's ever happened to,
it's
you,
only going two ways. I'm like, if it happened to any of us, I'd be like, I'm never washing this shirt again. It's getting hung up in a museum. One day I'm going to pitch it for the clubhouse. Like, here's the shirt that the wine spilled on. But can you imagine being a random stranger, like, just going to dinner? You're like in Nashville for the weekend because you loved Hayden Panettiere in that show. I loved the Nashville TV show so much. Thank you for indulging that. Connie Britton can do no wrong. We literally joke in life that, like, Blake is Julianne Barnes and I am Connie Britton from Nashville. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
But, like, you're just on your vacation in Nashville and these New Jersey people, like, are at the table next to you. And first of all, you're like, they're loud. And then there's this giant fight. It's one of my favorite things in the world, actually, is when somebody tells a crazy story, imagining how the other person tells the story. Or, like, the other bystander. You know, it's like, this happened, da, da, da. I'm like, yeah, but what did the bus driver say when he got home? It was like, you will never believe my... You know, that... It's one of my favorite mental games, is imagining the poor bystander's version of, like, an insane set of events.
Because I think everybody around them, if you are in on the joke, you know that this is insanity. This is, like... As much as we talk about the reality, it is an extended kind of, it's a hyper reality or an extended reality. It is in and of itself its own universe. So when you are able to, like, not quite pop the bubble, but scoot real, real close to see it,
yes,
there's something otherworldly about that because it feels like you shouldn't be able to.
Well, yes, because if you think about it, the, like, fights we watch reality show people have in public, at restaurants, in lobbies, in wherever. In real life, the only other time you see that is on, like, an episode of Cops. Like if you're there and cameras are shooting a thing, it weirdly gets to be bigger, louder, and last longer because you're like, well, someone is sort of supervising that. But if you saw it without cameras, you'd be like, we gotta get the fuck out of this restaurant. Like, those crazy people, that she just threw a glass at her. We have to go. I have to go. Or you would, like, be calling for security.
It is kind of an odd experience. And you think even about the Jersey reunion, which just wrapped, and the idea that, you know, Teresa had emergency surgery a couple days before, a week before, and had been told by her doctors, don't yell. If you had told me that happened after the fact, I would have been like, no, that she didn't have any. Because the woman was at peak. I think she was at peak tree.
Yeah. Well, also, I guffawed at that was the opening of that reunion. I was like, is there a nurse on set? Like, did she have to sign? Because, like, when I got my appendix taken out and I left the Silver Lake Medical Center to, like, drive across town to check myself into Cedars-Sinai, you're welcome. I had to sign a release form that said, like, against doctor's orders, I am leaving the hospital right now. Like, surely they made her sign one of those things because, like, the directions where you cannot get upset or angry and, like, have you met this woman not in a coma state? That, like, she's definitely going to get angry or upset today. So, like, what are we all doing? If she was literally told by a doctor, don't do that. But we're like, well, you're grown. Make your choice.
I mean, I think that there's probably a little wiggle room, right? Because
it
didn't
there is.
Just
yes.
happen. And she was able to recover at home. And then I think... I mean, was she muted? I don't even remember.
No.
Was she muted at all? I don't think so.
No, it was like fully, it was like the best, worst, it was like the worst version of her ever. It was so interesting. I can't.
Tell
her.
Me. No, it was
well,
so interesting. Tell me.
Here's
tell
the
me.
Like, I speaking of like misogyny and whatever, the problem with Teresa is that she's dumb. Like, and nobody will say it, but that's the root problem. And I don't even mean it as a judgment. I just mean it as like an objective truth at this point. Because people have an argument with her. They have a discussion with her. They give evidence to her. But she cannot process the facts as they are presented. And so, like, they keep, like she doesn't understand hypocrisy. The concept or the word, I think. Because, like, everybody presents, well, if you say this, but then someone else does the exact same thing, you do the opposite. I don't think it's that she doesn't care. I think it's she literally doesn't understand that those are the same thing. It's like the whole analogy thing. Like, she didn't understand what an analogy is, so we had an argument about the analogy. And so they have these circular arguments year after year after year where everyone's like, we're trying to show you that you're yelling at her about something that you also do. And not once have we seen her, like, register that connection.
What's the difference between intelligence and insolence?
And insolence?
Yeah.
Well, like, to me, insolence is, like, pouty, you know, like, yes?
What I'm trying to say, and I might not be communicating it effectively for the, quite literally, very first time, is, like, what's the difference between saying that Teresa's dumb and saying that she's making a choice not to understand? Like, I think she is making an active choice, which to me, different from questioning her ability to comprehend, which I think is also a valid critique. To say that she's not catching up with the ride and Marge is like running at 1,000 miles and
yeah.
Teresa's like
going
in a different direction, sometimes at a slow crawl. But still, I do think she is making an active choice to just disagree.
Oh, and see, and for me, it looks like she's making the choice not to listen. But for me, it just looks like, because not once for me have I felt like I saw her register what the actual argument was and then like choose to like say, I don't agree. For me, it's always looked like, I just don't think you understood their point.
Well, I think that for Teresa, there's an aspect of her that believes that changing one's mind is a sign of weakness.
100%.
And at the end, I thought Andy did honestly such a good job with the Jersey reunion. And at the end when he was like, because he seemed so curious, and the way that he was talking to her about her honestly to me felt like someone who had a lot of curiosity to understand the situation. This is like the millionth reunion
yes.
that he's done
yes.
but to me that was very effective for both the cast translation as well as the audience
yes.
And at the end when he said to her essentially something along the lines of like, have you ever changed your mind before?
Yes.
And we didn't get, not that he asked for a specific example, but I don't know that anyone at home was like, oh, right, that time.
Yeah. Oh,
when
yeah.
She, that was a little bit of a huh moment. Yeah. Maybe even more so than like the question about Melissa that led to the blackout. Like,
yes.
I think the idea
yes.
of like, have you ever changed your mind or acknowledged, you know, like the idea, the whole mission or motto of AG sometimes is like normalize changing your mind based
yes.
on new information.
Yes.
How does Teresa process receiving new information to herself?
Well, and see, and I guess, and that's where I'm being uncharitable because I'm like, I don't think she does. And for me, that ultimately becomes like dumb.
Well, I think that there's
there's a place for all. I don't think it's a matter of being uncharitable. I think it's a matter of it's your opinion.
Well, but it's also mine is because weirdly, I still have this like love for her. You know, there's like I root for her for all that she has been through. Like there's so many impressive things. And part of it is that same dogged nature is how she has climbed over the obstacles and the Joe of it all. And like all of that stuff he put her through. You know, I can't even fathom. And so it's like, it's a lot of our personality traits are two sides, right? Like in one way it's really beneficial and in the other it's a detriment to us if we don't. But it's that. It's like, I feel like, I think I was sad watching it because I don't, I think Marge, there was definitely an element of like wanting to protect you. I do care about you, you know, before it like went all haywire. And I do see how much Joe loves her and is frustrated by, you know, he's like, you say we do this, but then you do that. That's the same. And like being unable to get through to your sister. It's like if anyone should be able to help you process new information, surely it should be your family. And he's like, what you have left? And it is. I just always go like, I wish that once she could sit still enough in the argument or the discussion to like hear new things. But it's clear everyone has accepted she won't. You know, it's, Dolores is like, I don't try. Like, you know, I love her as she is and God love her as she is, you know, but she got closer this season to a couple of times being like, well, I may not, but like, that's who she and because we, you know, at a certain point you love people as they are or you don't. Right. Because if it's not going to change, you become the fool for like waiting on it to happen, I guess.
Well, it also seems like to Teresa, love means never asking the question. Like
it does.
The fact that Andy was trying to reason with her and essentially saying, if my best friend was seeing someone and there was all this shit out about, you know, the person my friend was seeing, I would ask them what the fuck is going on. And he says, like, essentially, can you understand that? Cutting in with like the comparing it to Dolores, and Teresa says with a lot of pride that Dolores didn't ask her any questions about it, which to me is like an indicator that friendship with Teresa means understanding she doesn't want protection or basic, you know, questions that you would ask a friend.
Yes. Well, and it's interesting because it's like, and Dolores can sit and go, that's fine because she's not family, right? Ultimately, no matter how close your friends are. But it is, it's like, it means you, there's no accountability of any kind. But also there's no protection, right? Because like we should all have at least the couple of people closest to us that no matter what we're feeling, if that person, that family member, that partner, that best friend says, hey, you aren't seeing this right, we at least stop and listen to them, right? Like I have those handful of people that no matter how intense I'm in a thing, if they were the, if one of them was like, I don't think you're right here, I would at least go, okay, explain it to me why I'm not, you know what I mean? And it feels like there isn't anyone in that category for Teresa. And I think it would benefit her to let one or two of them, and I think your best friend and like your brother should be able to be that.
You know what I wonder too? Like she doesn't necessarily have anyone in her life. The only people that she will probably allow to ask questions are really her daughters.
Yes.
But I just wonder what the standard is in the relationship with Louis, because she's already providing an environment in which she's saying to him, regardless of what you have done, I don't care. So I wonder how that affects a relationship when information could be seen as a form of accountability of like, I'm holding you accountable as my partner to explain to me what happened in your prior relationships because it affects me. For her to refuse to do that and to say that all of those people are trash and asking the question is a trash move and duplicitous, like how does that, what kind of, I know that sounds like incredibly, I don't even know what, but like, what's the foundation here when you're saying to this person who's done questionable things in his life, like that doesn't matter? What does that say about you as his partner?
Right. Well, it's funny. I did feel like Dolores captured that really well. She was like, look, it was so bad before that so many things seem better. You know, the like shelter.
Yeah, because
that,
of Joe.
Of that thing she said and then sort of instantly wished she hadn't because she was like, I'm not calling you a, like, I'm not, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just, that I thought that was really perceptive, right? That like, if you have been through significant relationship trauma, lots of the bar of what seems vastly better is very low. But yeah, not to even be able to have the space to say like, wow, So there's these things. Tell me about them. Tell me what you've changed or learned, you know, from them. Because it doesn't even have to be like that that's all okay. But you can also explain I've done things that I didn't, that I'm not proud of. And this is how I'm different and what I've, you know, there's lots of responses to that. But to not be curious, I guess, that's what it is for me sometimes. That like Teresa's not curious. Because it's like I've just decided and therefore that's it.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, there's an aspect of responsibility that I would think a partner would have to you in their behavior as a form of reflection. Like,
yeah,
you are telling the world with this engagement, with a partnership, with whatever else, you are choosing to be aligned with this person. It's the idea of marriage as a form of like a business relationship, but for love, you know, like,
yes,
that's the, there are true, quite literal legal aspects, which Teresa knows an awful lot about at this point. And I just wonder for her, even in how she reacted to things versus how Louis reacted to things, he's telling her, if you love me, you'll calm down. What does it mean if she can't control that impulse? But even more so, she can make the choice to disagree with him. Like, what happens? How does it work that Louis, who is the one affected, who Teresa is ostensibly defending, is saying he forgives Marge, and Teresa's continuing,
yes,
to battle?
Right. It's like, oh, so it isn't about me. It's about you and your pride and your place in this group at that point. You know, if I have said it's not, that is not what I want, that is not how I want you to defend me, that is not how I want us to move forward with this people you know that we know, and then you continue, then you are sort of clearly saying it's not about me. It's about you now.
And yet I don't know that it is really about Teresa. Like, I don't believe that she's holding on to this only, I think somewhat, but as some sort of like selfish or central thing, or the fact that she can't comprehend the new information or the idea that you can change your perspective. Like, the idea of forgiveness to Teresa is incredibly foreign to her. She doesn't understand it. She doesn't agree with it, maybe, the idea of forgiveness. And well, that's a tough thing to witness.
They go hand in hand, right? You have to be perfect in your like relationship to me, your defense of me, your loyalty to me. If perfection is the standard, then forgiveness is impossible, right? Because, you know, you have to allow that someone wouldn't be perfect in order to also allow, and therefore I can forgive and understand and move forward. It's like, it does sort of make sense. It's all or nothing. So like, there is no gray. So forgiveness inherently is about gray. It's like, you have done something I don't agree with, but we are going to choose to work past that is the bedrock of forgiveness as a concept.
Yeah, and it's also like the reflection of perfection, I think, is kind of interesting, because it makes sense why Teresa is with Jen, even more than like why Jen chose Teresa, regardless of like power in the dynamics of the cast, because Jen does that too. Like, she's combatively trying to convince people that her life is perfect.
Yeah.
When it's obviously not. We've seen what happens when she's confronted with the idea that it like maybe never was.
Yeah.
And yet she continues to say that where she and Bill are is perfect before yelling, screaming at him sort of in front of the cast minutes later. Not to say that she doesn't have the right to, but also like, at what point can we let go of the idea as perfection, because it doesn't exist.
Right.
It's like, what if we let go of the mask of perfection and understand that people are inherently broken and like make good choices and bad choices, but you're choosing to be with someone, isn't that closer to the perfection ideal? Like, the idea that you're still working, I think that shows so much character and grace to embrace the struggle.
Yes. It is where the like reality show of it all, I think, impacts stuff, right? Like, you know, it can only be real up to a certain point, because if you and I, you know, if you're like, you're being terrible, you're being misogynist, if we're just having a conversation in real life, sitting on a park bench, and I'm like, oh wow, I have a lot more room to be like, tell me what you heard, tell me how you understood, let me clarify, let's chat, whatever. There's lots of like air that can be let out by being like, there's an element of like, oh, but the cameras are on, where too many people's approaches don't give ground no matter what, because you may not get it back. right? Like, so I feel like that mm-hmm. factors in sometimes of like, if I admit there's a thing, can you use that? And I don't even mean consciously particularly, but I feel like if we're having a same conversation and you need to call me out about some behavior of mine, if there's cameras 6 inches from my face, it's going to be so much harder to go, oh, okay, I was wrong. Even as someone very prone to admitting I'm wrong, often, but you know, I just feel like that part of it, I don't think we are ever able to factor in enough for why some people do or don't really hit. Like, I want to paint the best picture possible. I don't know. Did I get somewhere with that? Did that make sense?
No, you totally did. And also, what does it mean to admit you're wrong on camera
right.
on versus off? Because, like, I think we're seeing that a lot in Beverly Hills. And before we switch over to what was, to me, a prestige episode, I correct. Do want to ask you about one quick thing. Because
yes.
I'm curious for your thoughts about Louis's, I'm curious for your thoughts about Louis's responses. And then I have a follow-up question. Pending your response.
Well, it's interesting. So I'm not as good a like purveyor of like the off network content. So like I saw like the screen caps of the videos and stuff.
I get that.
I'm not as deeply familiar with like what all of the actual accusations uh-huh. from the previous partners and things were. But I did find interesting the way he performed the reunion or the way he chose to attempt the reunion. It was so interesting to me because I thought if they had done that, like the third episode, the first time Margaret brought it up, if Louis had just come in and said, you know, what he mm-hmm. was going to say about it, it would not have been, you know, they could have sniped about it later, but it would not have been the conversation it was. And so for one, I thought y'all should have just sat and done this when Marge said he needs to sit and do this. And it wouldn't have been this big thing because I found his choice to like, own it and give explanations and the way that he was like, I want to move forward with these people, I was sort of impressed. That is not an approach we see men on these shows particularly respond to, that certainly that level of criticism, much less much other, you know. I don't have a value judgment on the specific accusations, but I understood some of the things he said made sense to me. And I thought reaching out a hand to Joe and Marge made sense, one, mm-hmm. for their jobs, two, for their relationships, you know, that is your actual brother, that I was impressed by. And I did think, like, if she would follow some of his lead, it would have played better for everybody.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, I did not know that Louis had been fired from a company he created or led or whatever as a result of the show. And it was interesting to watch Teresa refuse to process that.
Yeah.
Because the reality here is like, we can't, like, 1 + 1 doesn't equal 18. And yet we're continuing to enable a conversation in which Teresa is saying things that just to me are, they just don't make sense. It just, to me, genuinely, yes. sincerely, it does not make any sense that Marge is like at the police library or whatever, looking up files
right.
to figure out these things to then leak to accounts.
Yeah.
And regardless of all of that, let's pretend, which I absolutely don't believe, that Marge is the one who leaked this information
right.
to social media accounts.
It's bonkers.
Right, it's still information that was leaked about things that happened involving Louis well before he ever met Teresa that are ultimately his fault. And if he worked at a company that had some sort of morality clause or it was just incredibly bad press, I don't know that it's the fault of the show, just the show
right.
even in general,
right.
in making him a commodity for attention versus his responsibility for allegedly having these acts take place. Like,
right.
I would argue that when they happened, they were in one of his like ex-fiancés or ex-girlfriend had a big feature in New York Post and this other stuff well before Teresa. It's surprising to me that no one was upset before. Maybe the attention from the show forced his job to hold him accountable.
Yeah.
Because you would have thought this would have come up because of how many stories there were that
yes.
existed,
yes.
you know?
Yes. Well, and that goes to like my sort of earlier, like, I'm like, my problem with Teresa about that is, like, she kept saying, but you're bringing it onto the show. And, like, Marge's point was, like, it's already in the press. It's already everywhere. So, like, talk about it right here, because we're going to talk about it here, whether it's me or whatever. And Andy's point of, like, even if you had managed to keep it off the entire season, I would have asked you about it when you sat down on this couch. And that's where I get to, like, yes, whether it's not accepting new information, like, how have you been doing this for this long and you don't understand how the show you're on works, is sort of was my frustration.
And is she gonna get fucking over this? Like, she's getting fucking married soon and fucking mazel the fuck tov. Like, great.
Yeah.
But when are we gonna, are we never gonna be over this? Is she just fully set in hatred toward Marge? Because that does not sound great, like, great TV to me.
I know. And it's always been sort of a thing over there of, like, you know, where she goes, the show goes, for better or worse, which is frustrating because, like, Marge was, like, my favorite thing to happen to Jersey, you know, in eons, like, since the OG group, like, departed, because she brought a humor and a willingness to poke at herself and everything that I really, really love that franchise had a harder time with for a long time. And I worry that if this is a, like, her or me type situation, what does that do to the show if Teresa won't let it go? And she sat at that reunion and told us about how she was still mad at Melissa for, like, choosing to get married while she was 8 months pregnant.
I can't go over that.
I laughed because I was like, oh my gosh, we've all thought for years that Teresa was mad because Melissa and Joe sort of discussed with the producers, like, with or without her coming onto the show, her show. Oh my God, no. It's about that wedding. It is about that wedding. It is still about that wedding. She is mad at her for having to be a bridesmaid 8 months pregnant. I was like, this is the root. This is the root cause.
I think she's mad at her brother for leaving the family. I think in Teresa's head, Joe growing up and getting married was in some ways an affront to her and the brother-sister bond. And from that moment, Melissa was suspect and everything that she did was never good enough. And then we have the show itself.
Yeah. Because, like, do or don't like Melissa, whatever, Melissa's journey on this franchise is, like, she has threaded a nude... This will be our transition. You're welcome. She has...
Joe question. Okay, but go.
It's not really, but I'm laughing because, like, this heads to the next. But, like,
thread the noodle.
She has threaded a tighter needle than almost anyone, except, like, Dorit Kemsley also had to do one as well, like, and for way longer than Dorit had to. But, like, the tightrope.
With, like, LVP?
Yes.
What was the Dorit? Oh, okay.
Like, the journey of, like, coming in as, like, a minion. Like, her first two seasons where she was half a person because she, like, could not go afoul of, like, her entry point, you know? And then, anyway, I feel like what we're seeing from Dorit now is, like, the fruition of, like, a very long journey. But Melissa's been on a tightrope every day, every shoot, the entire time.
Yeah, because Melissa was, like, the anti-minion versus Dorit, who's, like, willing to do minion-esque protocol.
Oh, yes.
Melissa's
totally.
Like, I've already been to HR. Like, I'm not.
Yes.
We're not there.
But still
sorry,
having
ma'am.
A, like, you still always get to watch Melissa go, it's not worth it. Like, whatever the thing was, it's one of my favorite things that you can still see in Melissa's face. Like, the thing I would like to say, like, if we weren't related, the thing I would say is, but yeah, I'm just going to. Let it go to the ether. Like, pull the thought. Release.
100%. Before we pivot to BH, I do want to just reference something that I saw on Instagram today.
Yes.
By the account Bravo and Cocktails, friend of the me, I guess.
Important news.
Important news and a terrific account that gives true zero fucks. And in fact, oddly enough, I thought this was kind of strange that the show never actually credited her for...
Right.
She was the account that, like, actually brought a lot of this stuff to light, or at least consolidated it for many aspects of the Bravo community. I thought that was kind of wild that they didn't credit her.
Just be like, this is where it came from. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, okay. But,
like, because that is serious hard work.
Yeah, 100%. And so she posted something on Instagram earlier that I just thought was kind of interesting. And it says, hot take, Louis agreed with everything Teresa said about Margaret, but wanted to change the way the public saw him. He let Teresa take the fall and look belligerent, such a gentleman. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I mean, that's interesting. That certainly could be true, right? That he's like, well, you've already burned. You're the star of the show and you're setting it on fire. So I can make myself look good. Your job is not in danger if you stick with it by seeming to be the one calming And conciliatory. I mean, that certainly is possible. I mean,
I saw it this afternoon and I was like, ha-ha. But I had watched Jersey last night before I recorded an hour-long Patreon, including talking about my feelings as I process it, because I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
But I watched it last night. I saw this Instagram post and I was like, oh my God, because I was thinking that like he did a pretty good job XYZ, but this is interesting. And then I watched the episode again and I actually don't think that I agree. Or rather, I think that Louis is playing the part. I think he got, in the words of Summer House, activated when yes. Andy said to him, essentially, involve yourself in this, like yeah. do the Oprah thing that we know that you care about.
Yep.
And I think from that point, he changed maybe a little bit of his thinking
yeah.
in the sense of making sure it was actively clear that he wanted to be not conciliatory, but that he wanted to include a level of grace and make the effort to show that he was interested in moving on. And I wonder what his conversation was with Teresa before the reunion started. If yes. he was echoing her, if he was trying to calm her down, because I didn't get the sense before Andy said, involve yourself, that he was interested in truly working with Teresa to move on. I just saw him allow, not in a way that's misogynistic, but like allowing a chaotic environment to continue. I didn't see him interest, unless he was thinking he was going to exhaust her out, just let her spin and spin until she got tired.
Yeah.
Teresa never will. So like, I just didn't see from him, judging by his reaction until Andy asked him to intervene, that was of interest to him necessarily. But then from that moment on, when he went on stage, I was like, he's really interested in moving on.
It's interesting, guys. I don't know where he was on like, will I move on? But I feel like with the way that he sort of with her in the confrontations in the season, like, give me space to like, let me answer, you know, with the like dinner, you know, with the beach house. I feel like there's a part of him that is okay with explaining because he feels good about where he is, whether, you know, we'd all agree with it or not. That's like, I can answer for myself. I think there's a part of him that finds a little bit of her frustrating. If it's like, I can speak for myself because I think he thinks he has good answers to the questions. Does that seem crazy?
It doesn't. It just makes me wonder why he chose her. If he is so interested in having seemingly emotionally intelligent conversations when he's not out a thousand.
Yeah.
Because he himself has said, I was in a series of toxic relationships. That involves him as a form of that toxicity, which is different from what he had said in previous episodes where he's like, these women are just chasing the spotlight and they're all bad. Now, I think the reunion was the first time where he was truly acknowledging that he was a participant in the toxicity. I just wonder why Teresa, if he's interested in having conversations about how he feels, which might be different from how she reacts.
Well, here's where,
how is this gonna work?
I feel like Teresa's one of the, definitely is, she's 100% different when she does not feel threatened. Like, I think of
really good point.
I think of Girls Trip Teresa. I laughed because like on Girls Trip, I was like, that's a Teresa we don't see as often because on her show, she's always ready. Right?
She's so defensive.
You have
She's
to be
so
ready
defensive.
Because you never know where it's going to come from. Like, if you're at the top of the pyramid, everyone could be trying to take you down. And so I think that Louis in love with Teresa, I absolutely believe, like, two people, when she is open to you, I think that experience of Teresa would be 100% different. And so as long as he's not doing anything, you know, to cause that, to trigger that even, I think being in love with a hothead isn't a crazy thing as long as it doesn't become like it's coming at you all the time. So it's like, oh, I'm your safe place. I would imagine with him, she's lovely. You know, I'm thrilled with this guy. He makes me feel good. He tells me how much he loves me. He demonstrates it in ways. He says it in smart ways. He, you know, I think of all the things that are not her Joe that make sense that she would be drawn to, and that the version of her he might get of this like woman who just wants to be loved, who like has these daughters and this life and all the stuff she's been through. I bet who he gets is not who we see on that couch. And so there isn't that conflict actually existing in the relationship. And it makes sense that you'd be like, I don't like the way you deal with external conflict, but that's not the same as like how you deal with me. Then there isn't the same issue.
100%. I think that's a great point. And also, she herself said on Watch What Happens that they haven't fought, which it means potentially that maybe they're in an environment where she does feel really comfortable and safe, and maybe he feels the same. And also, sidebar, maybe the reason, not that I agree with it, I don't, but maybe the reason she doesn't want to sign a prenup is based on him losing his job. Maybe she feels somewhat responsible for that, and regardless of the fact that he has more money than she does according to her and maybe his current accounts, like, who knows, but maybe there's an element here of like, I want you to trust me in that, for better or worse, maybe we're dealing with a little bit of the worst now, and I want you to know that I don't believe, you know, X, Y, and Z will happen if we split. Maybe some of that is related to the news that he lost his job. I mean,
well, also, possible. I think it's the loyalty thing too, right? Because there's a perspective on prenups that, like, no matter how good you are about it, that's part of you is saying that I think it's possible it won't, right? And with the way she feels about, like, loyalty and commitment and all of that, I don't see her also being able to be like, yeah, I'm going to, like, put a clause forward that's like, but just in case, you know, I can see it just purely on that level too. And I don't think it is, but like seeing it as the, like, the insults that, you know, people have often. Think about how many prenups we've been through. Todd and Candy, like, we just spent the whole Summer House season talking about. It's a fascinating thing to watch, particularly when, like, with, like, reality stars, where it's like, oh, the reason for the prenup is the thing we're also doing right now too, is weird.
100%. And it is also a little bit of a TBD, and depending on what happens with the filming of their wedding, which is somewhat in dispute a little bit of what's going to happen there, I think, at least right now.
Really? Sure. Are they in a, like, will they, won't they? Is it part of the next season, or is it, do we not know?
I don't know if they're negotiating some sort of special, which I would doubt. Maybe just because of the level of volatility attached to this.
Yeah.
But she said that she said that they're still discussing it. And I assume that's for some sort of financial incentive. And listen, she has every right to try to figure out how to make this happen at a premium, because it sounds like that wedding's going to be fucking pricey AF.
I just want to see the seating charts.
I want to know which Sex and the City character Louis sees himself as the most, because the reveal that Sex and the City was his favorite show was fucking adorable. And I loved it.
It's also, and to him, you know, in trying to give grace, we've talked a lot about it in my cameos here. I also hope that there's
your quarterly report.
Correct. My quarterly check-ins. Hey, guys, it's this Emerson with my book report on the current state of the Bravo universe.
Thank you, 3AG.
Also, I was definitely that child. Like, hi, my book report is, but I don't know where I lost it. I lost the thread.
Louis. Thank you. Sex and the City.
Yes, but like giving the grace of like, maybe you all, you know, whatever these trauma and what you and other people have done to each other in relationships, there is room for you to be new and different now too. And maybe part of him is like, I want to show you, I'll show your friends, I will prove to this audience that I'm not the person that I was when A, B, and C. And there shouldn't be a life expiration on changing your mind, changing your behavior.
Absolutely. And then, you know, shifting gears a little bit to Beverly Hills, what happens when your behavior doesn't change? Which to me was the theme of a phenomenal, I don't even know, was it the second episode? Third? No, it was the second. Fucking crazy.
I know.
I actually thought the episode was over, and then I was like, oh my God, I still have 11 minutes to go.
I know.
Wow.
How is our franchise that has never managed to accomplish anything
doing
feeling
everything.
Like so much is happening?
So much is happening. I'm literally, I'm at the literal edge of my seat right now. Curious for your thoughts on all of it. Mention it all, Emerson.
I could not be more thrilled. I feel like everyone is firing on all cylinders. You know, there's the interesting way in which real life, right, intrudes into our reality life. I was thinking about, had the like horrifying events that Dorit went through with the break-in not happened, and these first two episodes just been about a Watch What Happens Live interview about a charity event that was
still
multiple years ago.
Still would have been great. You don't think so?
I think it would have been fine. But I think because there's part of me, I mean, I saw the episode, so I knew what they were talking about. But I think about like both of your references are things that are not current. I think mm-hmm. there could have been an element of like, are we going to do six episodes on like an Elton John fundraiser from like 5 years ago? And we're going to once like the Lucy Lucy Apple Juicy is like mm-hmm. Neil Patrick
You're
Harris is somehow involved. But because of the juxtaposition of like the highest end like charity fundraiser ticket purchase drama. Like, first of all, that's what I come to Housewives for. I am not one of those people, like, I don't want your life to be traumatic. I appreciate when traumatic things happen and you share it with us, but I do not mm-hmm. wish drama on any of these women ever. If they just sat around and argued about nonsense, I would still show up. The 100%. Original presentation of, like, rich people and rich people problems sold mm-hmm. me. But the balance, the juxtaposition of that with, like, the genuine, like, vulnerability that PK and Dorit shared. But also, here's my Sermon on the Mount for today. The like nonsense, the nonsense people online, and I'm sorry, you are nonsense people who are convinced that this is somehow faked, a fraud attempt or whatever.
Emerson, that's a big sidebar. I might disagree with you, but I don't think that it's nonsense because I want you to keep listening. So don't be, let's not. It's probably a big part of the listenership, to be honest. I'm dead serious.
Who really?
A lot of people question it.
But here's my reasoning, and I appreciate it. That's the reason I did it. It's my sermon, of course. Like, if we don't bring controversial opinions, what fun are we having here?
Don't ask the listeners because I've heard quite a few reactions.
No, they get you get to bring them. But that's the fun of like, because also like none of us are having a real impact on this situation. Let's remember that. I do not believe there is any world in which Dorit Kemsley is a good enough actress to perform the scene 100%. On the bench outside of 100%, the party.
100%, 100%.
That's my only, because like 100%. People were like, it's all fake. She had a plan from the beginning. I'm like, that performance right there. I was like,
don't question the trauma. She's a woman in trauma. She's
we have. Trauma. So that is my only like, I'm like, so it cannot all be fake because of that moment for me. That is my big statement on today on that portion of the adventure. And it's fine. You're welcome to come and disagree with me. But I really did. I was like, we've seen a lot of like people experience bad things on these shows and whatever. But watching literally her physical body go. Because what I watched happen was, like, we came, we told the story, we agreed to do the reunion on camera. Obviously, they FaceTime and discussed, like, I will come and we'll say this and we'll be there long enough to get the story out and then we gotta go. Seeing them walk out of what I watched happen was her walk out of the building and go, okay, we did what we needed to. We fulfilled our commitment. And then when he went, wait, where's my phone? Her body, it's like when you get home and you need to use the bathroom. You know, and so you're like, oh, I'm so home. And my body knows, like, now I have to pee like the world's ending because I know I'm close to the bathroom. If you suddenly get stopped at the doorway, you're in so much pain. It felt like that, like adrenaline, anxiety, all of that happening in her body of like, I thought we were escaping and now you're going back inside and my body's like already finished with all of this for today. Does that make sense?
I think she was just trying to convince herself that she would be okay by saying out loud, I'm okay, I'm okay. It's because she's very clearly not okay. It is what you are doing in the moment. Everybody has a different reaction to trauma, which can have lifelong effects on how you react to things in the future. And I think in the moment, she was still in that place. And I think it's a difficult, here's the thing, is that I don't think in any way Dorit, I think Dorit was robbed. Any questions about anything outside of that? I only care about the fact that Dorit was robbed. I don't believe that she knew it was going to happen.
That's my, yes.
Her kids' lives were quite clearly put in danger. I do believe that these people who came into her home did tell her they would kill her. I think she was absolutely very clearly traumatized. And I think if you watched her reaction and her behavior on Watch What Happens, you can see elements of that are very much, she herself was like, I was essentially triggered watching this, and the fact that we're all discussing it. Yeah. She's dealing with some stuff and I fervently yada yada.
Yeah.
The thing that I think
makes
people feel a certain way, not to devil's advocate that, because I can't more clearly state that I fervently believe that what she said happened to her, and that she was, to me, very clearly traumatized. That being said, I actually don't think it's wild that people are questioning this, considering having nothing to do, honestly, with Dorit and PK, who people take issue with because of PK's long reported and admitted financial difficulties and everything else. Even putting that aside, which is an element of why a lot of people are raising question marks, when you think of how fraud has played an enormous role, even in the season prior, and regardless of Erica's smart-ass remarks, the way it is going to continue on Beverly Hills and Salt Lake City, but specifically on Beverly Hills, when the guy no one really had any questions about for at least a while, specific to the show itself in this universe, turns out to have swindled innocent victims of over $100 million. When you think about that and the fact that people believed he was a certain way and then were deceived, actively deceived by his behavior and an environment that his wife worked very hard to protect, and you hear what happened with Dorit and PK, and you understand reported financial difficulties, I do understand how people could be thinking about fraud because of what happened and is going on with Erica and Tom. It doesn't mean I agree that Dorit was in on something, but I understand that the landscape was set up prior to enable, I don't even think it's related to like the Judices and stuff, Judices, I have to say all three at once.
Yes, like I know, because like I no longer know what to say.
Can't do one, gotta do three, regardless. But I think that there is a landscape that has changed here, which means people are going to be maybe more curious for information because her cast member... This is like national news. I get it. I don't agree with it, but I get it.
I totally get that too. But my counter to it then would be, right, but also you would have to be the dumbest person to ever do reality television if a literal cast member's husband on the show that you are related to is having like legal fraud related things happening and then think, you know what? But I can do it.
It's a yes and.
It's like, oh, it's like, what do you think? Like, oh, we watched how that went and that they didn't do it right. I could do it better. Look, I mean, certainly all the theories, but I don't want to negate her experience. But I get why people, and we're also prone to be very suspicious now of people anyway, because we have seen it happen. But I do. I would think you would have to be even, it would be like if it was your first season and no one had ever been accused where you could think, oh, I could get away with this. But now at this point, oh my gosh. To think, you know what? I'm going to do it better than all the other ones that have been caught.
It's also, it's so wild the ways that this Dorit incident is being used so quickly after. The ways that Kyle, who is in my top five favorite housewives, which doesn't mean I am not entirely happy to drag her as necessary. That's the kind of fan I am. I'm able to hold people I like accountable. I'm not just saying she's a piece of shit because of things that I see her do that I think are shitty. That being said, I understand that she's protective of her friend. I understand that she felt that Sutton was tone deaf to the situation.
Yes.
I think Sutton contemplating over the time that has passed would probably agree with some aspects of that. But if you are sitting down with someone, as Kyle did with Sutton this week, and you say to this person, this terrible thing happened and you were not sympathetic and that was horrifying to me, you need to explain to me why. And this person actually has an explanation. It doesn't negate Kyle's feelings about how she felt. It doesn't negate what Kyle has now started with Dorit and PK by telling them and everyone else, which is obviously Erica, the best thing that's ever happened in Erica's life is finding out about this. All that being said, it doesn't take away from that. But if this woman is saying to you, I was triggered because I was robbed when I was a child and my father died by suicide involving a gun, and your response back to her is this moment isn't about you, when you yourself said to her, I need you to explain how this is about you so I can process you even saying, That was an insane moment to me. I have to tell you, Kyle's response was absolutely unbelievably as callous as she believes that Sutton was. I have to say it.
Okay, I'm so glad that you said that because that's what I laughed at the end of it.
I thought it was so callous. Because I thought it was so unempathetic.
You literally just did to Sutton what you're accusing Sutton 100%. Of doing to Dorit by proxy. 100%. Well, first 100%. Of all, the first conversation I loved on every level because I got it on both sides. Like, Sutton is having a day. Kyle's like, this is all I can think about, and you like, this is not the same. We are not in the same place today. That was just great scene work because, like, that happens in real life. I would feel different if Sutton had been sitting with Dorit about it. You know, it's like, but it's like, it didn't happen to you, Kyle. So, like, being a little less sensitive as we're talking about a thing that
I
happened.
I still have to live my life even when this terrible thing happened. Right. Which I, like, kind of don't entirely believe. I don't understand a little bit of Kyle's mood. I get it.
It was still bonkers, but it was, a great thing. And
I mean, we all have a French designer who couldn't get past customs. I understand.
I mean, it actually happened to mine the other day. He was Chilean, but, you know, like, same. But that is the housewives that I love. Like, I really am stuck on what's going to happen if we can't get this thing in. Yes, this crazy thing happened, but, like, here I am. And yeah, we'll get to that, but I need to tell you what's going on in my day first. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then we'll get to the thing that happened. I loved every level. And I loved Kyle bringing it back up. That's good Housewives TV. Hey, it was crazy to me the other day that that this thing happened to our friend and you were, like, worried about immigration. That is not equivalent. Like, mm-hmm. that bothered me, frankly. But to then, what you talked about, to not receive the information as shared back, like, whether you agree with it or not, if somebody says back to you what Sutton said about, like, I can't go towards those spaces because it hits these places for me, you can't be like, nope, which is what Kyle did. She went, nope, not received, not understood. I was like, but also, okay, great. This is what I'm here for.
I mean, I thought it was honestly a wild and highly interesting moment.
Yeah.
As was the entirety of the table seat ticket mishigas. For Sutton to have those receipts, not be allowed to share them, and Diana to be such a boss, I just...
When I tell you that, like, everyone's performance at that table, it reminded me of the backyard scene... The birthday, Garcelle's birthday. Yes, the Garcelle birthday party scene, you know, that we had all the elements, like, we were at the bar and Dorit was fixing her lipstick. We got the crazy pants line, like, that episode where, like, everyone performed out. This, like, was so the same for me. We're, like, on all the levels, everyone. I was like, the mental gymnastics that Lisa Rinna achieved in the course of, like, a minute and a half of, like, this is what? Well, I have the receipts. That's so tacky. Who brings receipt? Like just without even a blink, a complete 180. And then Garcelle just like, you have them, show it to her. Diana being like, I don't know. I deal with the big, big money. I just like everyone at that table. I was like, this is performance art piece.
It literally is. And the thing of it is, I think some people miss LVP in this sense, guys, just bear with me. Let me finish. Yes. In the sense of someone who can really piss off Lisa Rinna.
Yes.
And I look at Diana, who I know is introduced as Lisa's friend. But if you look at how fucking quickly Lisa went from trying to bury Sutton, reference this stuff, table shame her, even though there's a whole other conversation about, like, Rinna said during that scene she bought two tickets and then gave them away, but people, you know, Bravo journalists.
If you bought them, they would show up on the donation.
Right, yeah. Regardless of whether or not you allow people to use them in your place, and then they were sold out, so were you trying to buy two more? Regardless of that, Rinna was gleefully enjoying making Sutton feel bad, relishing and not accepting her apology until Diana used the language like, you're both being silly and dumb, so move the fuck on.
Yes.
From that moment, Rinna didn't even finish her sentence.
Yeah.
She went immediately into, I'm embarrassed by this conversation that I set up, that I have been participating in. That P.S., she doesn't seem to be that embarrassed because she's continuing it on social, like, literally this week. But
I mean, also,
I don't know.
But she's just great at, like, at real time reliving the drama of the past for the sake of like the social media audience. You know, she all she does that every year. So that's sort of like she re-engages the season arguments as they happen on in real time. But what I loved was the like lack of logical attention at all to the fact that like, I can't believe you brought those. What do you mean? To this thing where I knew you were going to do this? You know, it'd be one thing if like I started the conversation with look, but like, you can't say, like, it's so tacky that I have those when you definitely started this conversation, and so it's a good thing that I have... You know what I mean? That, that like, I brought them because I knew you would do this, and you did this, so I have them.
I can't believe you're defending yourself. You won't allow me to pummel you to the ground. I'm used to dealing with Denise, who will leave, but you're not even doing that yet, even... She, there were two moments that clicked to Rinna. One is Diana saying, stop, you look, this is stupid. And the other is Garcelle saying, I'm leaving the scene. It's, you're actively, Rinna's like understanding, wait a second, but I need this person on my side. And also if she's saying I look dumb, then I'm going to look dumb. And also she is, has a fucking ton of money and power and whatever else. And then Garcelle saying, you're losing me as a performer, essentially. Because... this scene is so dumb. Those are the moments that can reel Rinna back, and maybe the only ones.
But, and it bodes so well for the seasons. I mean, the Diana Jenkins introduction was exquisite for me.
I'm obsessed with her.
It worked on every level. Like
absolutely everyone.
And the self-awareness. I love that she was like, nouveau riche. Like, you can't say that to her She said, I made new money. I started really poor. I worked real jobs. I have all this money and I buy everything that the money can buy. I did, but our amusement, you know, Blake's a Disney super fan. And so the Rob Minkoff of it all, and also he's from the North Valley in LA. So like Crystal is as well. We laughed because I did the deep dive on Asher Monroe because I was curious and he's handsome. He spent 4 years on Broadway as Chip in Beauty and the Beast. You're welcome. And so I laughed thinking there was definitely a whole like Disney conversation at that other table that they, that is on like the...
That'd be fun to watch, honestly.
That like someday, but you know, Rob, giant Disney, if I were Asher, my connection would be like,
director.
I was also involved with it. I mean, I literally played Chip on Broadway for 4 years.
Oh, I would like, love to watch. Because I love that moment where it's like all the guys talking books and Asher's there and he's engaged, and I love that he's engaged and they're just making this moment work, and I was into it. I liked it.
I appreciated also that he showed up like, I'm ready to play. I'm here.
Yeah, he's like, it's his fiance.
Their at-home stuff was cute. He was also in a boy band for several years as well.
Would we know the name?
No, B-something. They definitely did, like, they performed on, like, the iHeartRadio type, like, the big, you know. Like a three-year journey. But yeah, you're welcome. I was curious. And so, but he was, like, active listening, is what I would call it, like, to the other husbands at the table. So, like, I'm very excited about what Diana's going to do in the group dynamic. And, like, the fact that Sutton feels, that's, the back and forth with Sutton and Erica, I was like, great. I'm glad that the fight is like on equal level. Like the snap back and forth of that. I was like, I'm glad Sutton is like happy to stand in it with her. I feel like we have lots to go. And my only question I have left is, where is Kathy Hilton?
Well, Kathy, I think, was still negotiating her contract at the beginning
at
of
this
the
point.
Season. I think she joined late for that. But I don't know. And then she excuses herself and leaves before the party ends toward the end of the season. But the Erica stuff, I don't want to sound like a broken record, except like...
And yet, it's always worth repeating. Come on.
I mean, and speaking of, by the way, sidebar, why can you not use It's Expensive to Be Me and How Many Fucks on Instagram stories? Why do I only have old Erica Jane... the archives
weird.
And not the new stuff. And you used to be able to have it. And this has, it's just someone at Instagram HQ, if literally a single person works there.
Yes.
And
definitely, yeah. Because it's certainly not like she's like, no, we're holding the license for like the Apple commercial.
Right? Like what's going on? It's very weird. But anyway, regardless of that, Erica taking her moment, which she's going to do for the entirety of this season.
Yep.
To say that Sutton owes her an apology for slandering her. You could argue that Erica owes Sutton an apology and not the reverse for putting all of these women into this position in general without taking responsibility for being a participant in the crime or whatever else, I don't think Sutton's in the wrong for reacting to quite literal ongoing national news.
Right.
That being said, the ways that Erica looks at Sutton as harming her life, that she doesn't think about relating to Tom, it puts off so many like warning alarms in me that make me believe, I mean, if we're going to talk about, I don't think this is a conspiracy theory, but it's definitely a theory related to something. I think there is a part of me, a big part of me that thinks that Erica believes that Tom did nothing wrong. There is such a missing piece here of distorted anger that Erica has the right to feel about being in this situation and about people saying you're a criminal, you're a crook, yada, yada.
Yeah.
That isn't Sutton's fault. And the ways that she even used slander, and I'm thinking to myself, Sutton didn't put you in this position. Sutton's
right.
reacting to LA Times pieces, whatever
right.
else, about your husband being a crook. If yeah. you want to talk about someone slandering your reputation, ask the man who stole $100 million and used it to further your career. Ask questions relating to Tom. If you can't ask him because of whatever situation he's in right now medically, you can certainly process this on some level. If we're going to talk about performance
yes.
art,
yes.
there is a level of performance Erica is unwilling to do, and I don't think it's because of a legal defense. I think it's because she really doesn't believe that what happened happened, and she'd rather blame Sutton than Tom.
Yeah, or at the very least, if you know, because I'll be honest, early on, I thought the like mental incapacitation thing was likely a tactic from a brilliant lawyer who was like, if we go this way. But I think now you're in like an institution and a play like that. That's a little far to take that performance. That was just my suspicion. So like, so if there's also the like, if you really are incapacitated in a way where I couldn't be angry at you, then like Sutton's the only target.
But she has never expressed anything unrelated to his medical decline. She has never seemingly expressed anger about the situation directed anywhere near Tom,
yeah.
noting that she was also filing for divorce immediately before this stuff broke.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing any anger toward him about whatever led to the dissolution of their marriage.
Yeah.
And I'm not seeing any anger toward him understanding that Erica, probably more than anybody else, loves to relish in a little bit of misdirected rage.
Yeah.
And I'm not seeing any of that his way. We're not even talking what happened in your marriage, what happened in your divorce.
Yep.
We're barely talking about this other stuff because she's having too much fun.
Is the only time that like she mentioned it at all was, did Andy ask her about it at the reunion last year where he was like, are you angry at him at all? Am I inventing that? I'm asking.
He probably did, and she probably said, of course, just like he was like,
but that's the
only
time.
Do you feel empathy for the victims? And
yeah.
she says, of course. Like, I don't, there's something
oh,
about
totally.
Me that is in a complete, I just don't believe her. I believe that she believes that whatever this is a conspiracy to bring them down.
Yeah. And well, and also like, if you really felt that, it would be coming up regularly. I can't even imagine how I would stop talking about it, honestly, in the same situation. You would be like, could you please, like, the man is in a home, leave it, stop. Like, that it would be the only thing I could talk about.
I mean, and she chose to have glam. Like, what? Ma'am, you were still playing this part? We're still playing this part?
Yeah.
You're still going to have a creative director? Like, I don't even, if you're going to have a hairstylist and makeup, like, honestly, that's a whole other mishigas because you are on a TV show and whatever else. But, like, we're still going to pretend that Mikey has a job related to this?
Right. I mean, like, whatever in the life goes on of, like, if you're spending your money and stuff now, but still, if you had any feeling about the, like, the rest of the circumstances, because I don't know how, at this point, you don't have, like, lots to say about the guilt associated with whether you, if I knew nothing, I always go, what would I do, right? If I knew nothing and then knew that, like, I had been doing all these things unbeknownst to me at the expense of some other people, I mean, I'm a guilt-oriented person anyway. I feel bad about stuff.
Well, I mean, I'm Jewish. I get
right.
it.
Right, yes. Yeah. And I'm Southern
it
and gay.
It was my Haftorah portion. Yeah. It was like, and another thing about feeling bad. Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to stop thinking about that. Of like, I would be staring at my stuff, be like, So not going that route. What I love is Sutton standing in once again. Because like everybody else, like whatever, we have a show to shoot and we can't talk about that all day every day. So her being the thorn in Erica's side a little even more stronger, you know, than was great to see that launch for me.
But Erica expecting an apology. I here's the thing. We're all about talking about people's behavior, and yep. I can empathize with Erica, and I can yeah. talk about the ways that you think about how she was yada, 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 Tom, yada, yada.
Yep.
I don't think she's a good person. I don't think that this has changed her. I don't think she's ever been good. I think that her life was a whole lot easier so she could have a lot more fun, but I don't think she's changed in the sense of everyone would change if this happened to them in some way.
Yeah.
Just as a way to just survive it. She's in survival, or at least was. I think yes. she still is.
I think definitely. Yeah,
but
still.
But I don't think that she was great and is now bad. I don't know that she's ever been good. I think she's always probably been a dick and has not been able to like empathize with people in a way. And yeah. I think that something is really fucking weird with this Tom stuff, because if this happened to me, I've had people on, I've had guests on, I've had friends who've said, if this happened to me, if whatever, I would rush all my stuff over and have it immediately sold to help the victims. God bless if you do that. I don't think that's realistic. I think
yeah.
she's fighting to keep
yes.
whatever, yada, yada. And there are a bunch of people coming at yes. her way. Like her yes. legal strategy in some ways, I understand, even though I think the way she's misrepresenting wanting the victims to be helped while like contesting yeah. and fighting back is other thing.
And my one caveat in there is like, I don't think like wherever all the places the money went, you know, her, the house, the law firm, the lawyer, you know, it's not like, oh, she is the only one. You know what I mean? I do get the like.
Oh, yeah. A bunch of people benefited.
Like everybody benefited. From right. it.
So like when it comes to like fighting back legal placement. Stuff, yeah. I don't expect her to show up at a U-Haul with a U-Haul
right.
with
and be like,
all
no,
of
it's
the Cartier
fine.
And
yes.
Panther and whatever else.
Yeah, that's the only.
That being said, if my husband of 20 something years
yes.
stole $100 million from victims and selfishly put me in the position to have to be the one to answer for his crimes,
yes.
I would have a lot of anger. And if I was... If I was being rageful towards you because of that, there would be a moment where I would process the fact that I'm sorry I was a little bit of a cunt to you, but like there was yes. other stuff going on.
Yes.
But and like maybe I'm still pissed about some jokes that you made about this happening, but whatever else. But I would be very, very angry about being misled yes. if I was thinking about it person yes. out. Or out into the person, I'd be very angry that this man stole money from burn victims and orphans. I would be very angry, yes. both about how he affected my life and
yep.
other people's lives. And
yep.
I'm only seeing her being angry about her life being affected, not specific to Tom.
Yes.
And there is a level, I get it. She didn't grow up with money. She had to fight, blah, blah, blah. And
yep.
she fought hard. She did a lot of work to fucking stay in this marriage and probably put up with a lot of shit and
yeah.
did not anticipate this happening. What happened, happened. But also, I don't know. I think it's fucking bonkers
yeah.
that sitting here today, I can genuinely say
yep.
that I don't think she gives a fuck about the people that were harmed, because I think she's attaching it to an aspect of thinking, understanding, whatever else, that Tom was not entirely in the wrong. The way that she excuses
yeah.
his career stuff, the way yeah. she talked about Dennis on Watch What Happens, she is so fucking flippant. And I don't believe that it's only a defense mechanism. I think it's because she thinks this is her reality. And that is my soapbox moment.
You
Thank
can
you
too.
Very much. Sponsored by Dove.
Oh, yes. Dish, Dawn, all of the above. No, it's
I
like,
love Dove. I love Dove.
And... all of those, I get that, all of that. You know, I really see that. Because my big thing is, I have a hard time connecting to your disconnection. You know, at this point, you did a whole season, you did a whole reunion, and you could have the opportunity to see yourself. And if you looked at all of that and thought, yeah, perfect, I did that
yes,
great.
Yes, queen. I did that so great.
I am nothing if not, like, always caught up in, like, was that good? We will finish this momentarily. And I'll be like, was that good? Was that fun? I hope people enjoy it. Like, instantly. Like, it just... So, like, to not think anything you did at any point was like, I was not my best self there with you.
I don't even begrudge that part because I think that she's being attacked in so many ways, yes, regardless of whether or not some of it's deserved, that I get her being defensive. I get her feeling like anything coming my way is related to everything else coming my way.
Yes.
I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt with many aspects of that and the current environment she's in and the feeling of like high, enormous stress and the fact that this is not going away anytime soon, regardless of whatever she's telling Garcelle. That's like very immediately debunked.
Yep.
I it's not even that. It's just there is anger toward Tom,
yes,
that I'm not seeing. I don't believe it's a part of a legal strategy or a legal strategy alone, because if it was, she would not have glam in her house. She would not be behaving toward the women in the way that she is. You don't get to say, I'm not going to feel this way toward a person because of legal strategy, but I'm going to do all this other shit that you know is not recommended. I think she doesn't think it. And it's like, sure, does she have the right to believe that her husband is innocent? Okay, but then we're going to ask these fucking questions every fucking time.
Yes.
When you ask Sutton for an apology, I'm going to be like, okay, cool, you first.
Right, yes. And that's the, yes, yes, you first.
I would love, honestly.
Yes.
Because I know people who are friendly with Erica, who had great experiences, and God bless. Yeah. And I think that's all fine and good. There is only... There are two housewives. There are two-ish housewives I would have no interest in speaking with on the pod. And Erica is not one of them. And this would never happen, even though I would be happy to tailor it to not getting into any specifics.
Right.
I genuinely, even after what I just said about her being a piece of shit, which, I mean, who isn't?
Well, I was going to say.
Of course, it's a different flavor. But even with all that being said, I would love to talk to her about some of her reactions. Genuinely. No, yada, yada. I would love to chat with her because I think long form, which she would never agree to,
right,
would be interesting. I would only be interested in talking about the things she would have no interest in talking
correct
about relating to Tom.
You're like, very specifically, it's about Tom.
I just want to talk to you for like a very quick 6 to 8 hour mini episode. And I just want to understand what inspired the divorce? nothing that like legal people would be interested in. What inspired the divorce and how you feel about Tom?
Yes.
And how you feel about Sutton and what comes to mind when I say the name Sutton?
Yes.
And what comes to mind when I say the name Tom? Even what comes to mind when I say Garcelle?
Uh-huh.
But also, it's about Tom.
It is.
It's about Tom.
It's about Tom. It is. And weird that, like, I mean, yes, it's one of those common male names in the world. But it's weird that, like, it's about Tom.
Don't trust Tom.
Don't trust Tom. Literally, no housewife. Don't pick any more Toms.
Have we seen a good Tom?
Well,
Tom. Yeah, Schwartz and
say,
Sandy.
Schwartz and Sandy. But, like, you know, they're having troubles. But, yeah, they're not in the same camp. They're, like...
I mean, I think they're both saying it's about Tom, but about each other.
Yes.
So it's always about
Tom. It's always about Tom. I mean, that was the problem. They're getting divorced because it was about Tom. Like, that's, you know...
Ugh, I can't believe... I'm never going to watch that season. I watched the reunion. I'm never going to watch it.
That last season?
That just happened. Yeah, it just does not look good to me.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. But they got picked up again. I don't know who's going to be in the cast.
It was very... I know. That would be... Are we doing the Valley, like, raising babies, or what are we doing?
I don't know.
Their season finale was at the Sunstone Winery, which is very fun for us, because in the, like, pandemic era, when we could first go places... We drove 2 hours north to a winery for Blake.
Aww.
Where, because you could drive up, walk just to your patio table. Everyone had masks. They would bring the tastings.
So nice.
So it was like our first venture out was to the very winery where James and Raquel's doomed engagement was celebrated.
I do have to say, shouting out locations, I did have dinner with the Smith sisters, stars from Radio Andy and Emmy-nominated Superwomen, Superfab, Super Fierce, Super Everything.
Yes.
But we did have dinner at the location when I went to LA in October, at the location where Harry's birthday was held.
Yes.
I was like, oh my God, it was
fantastic. I couldn't tell you the name of it, but it was great. And it's connected to that hotel, which is like
yes.
where essentially that long table was.
Yes.
Highly recommend it. It was a really great, very chic, sort of bougie LA experience. And I loved that Dorit filmed there because I yes. remember when they did paparazzi shots with the 2 days after the incident at Dorit's, because I think I was like talking to Mariah or Lauren about, oh my God, that's where we just had dinner.
That's amazing. Well, and now because of this episode, I want to have like a dinner at the Andaz. I mean, we chase places. I don't know if I've told you before. We did Blake's birthday 1 year at the Quiet Woman. We drove like 2 hours down to Orange
did
County.
You?
Shannon came in that night. While we were there, remind me, I will send it to you. We reenacted the photo of Kelly blowing, please. Like fish blowing on the door behind
send it
Peggy
to me.
Suleiman.
I'm going to use it. I'm going to use it as a part of the graphic on IG. I'm
like we chase locations. We do that. No, literally the guy came over to the table. They sat us at the table and then moved us to a corner booth. It was better. But he was like, I know why you're here. Shannon's coming in for her birthday in a little while if you stay. And we got to see her at the Quiet Woman.
Wait a second. Don't we have the same birthday? Wasn't it March 27th?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, March 27th. Because Shannon's birthday is... I share mine with Vicki Gumbelson, which I pretend to ignore, which I do actively ignore. But
that's
Shannon's birthday is the day before, the 26th. My queen.
Yes.
My broken bird.
I love that.
I love that. Listen, I could talk to you forever.
Same.
Thank you for your quarterly...
My quarterly check-in. And y'all, I adore you all. I love hearing from y'all what you think of what we talk about. Please feel free to hit me up and share your thoughts and opinions. All are welcome. And I love being here.
And I would say like 86% are welcome on my end. So be judicious, Amy.
You deal with it a little more constantly than I do.
I do. Emerson Collins, tell the folks what you got cooking, where they can follow you on social, anything you want to hint to in the
yes.
future. Tell us what's up.
You can always find me. I'm big responsive on Instagram now, Emerson Collins. I do check the tweets. I've been trying to do that a little more, even though it's like a hellscape. At actually Emerson. And a fun thing, Blake and I did a bunch of live stream cabaret shows from our living room during the lockdown era. And we did a tryout of a show here in LA in February. And in the next like week and a half or so, we should have a very fun announcement of like, we're going on the road and doing some things.
Oh,
that's very exciting for me.
Yeah, that's going to be very exciting. And where can people find out more?
I will definitely post that. It'll show up on socials, on Insta, and then tickets for everything will be available on my website, emersoncollins.com.
You guys are not going to want to miss it.
Okay, fine. I'll tell you the title.
Okay, tell me.
It's called I Dreamed a Dream Girl.
Oh, my God.
Because I sing like Diet Josh Groban, and he sings like one of the muses from Hercules. So I Dreamed a and Dream Girl. And the opening number is that... those two songs mashed up. It's horrifying and fantastic.
Wait, do you have video of it?
Yeah, I'll send you some clips.
Okay, I want to see it. That's iconic. It's also a fabulous title. Can
right?
I take a moment? That's mm-hmm. that's a dreamy title.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, it's a dreamy title. I mean, die for it. And guys, speaking of things that are dreamy and hopefully maybe not fatal, I was going to do a twist on To Die For, but uh-huh. now I'm also thinking about Nicole Kidman, so I'm all over the place. The Andy's Girls Patreon, number one way to support the pod. You get exclusive bonus episodes, invites to special Zoom kikis, and more. Big announcement coming out that some of you might be particularly interested in. So join the AG Patreon. They're going to get the first word about what I've got cooking, and also an hour-long bonus episode went out last night where I live reacted to Dubai and shared some thoughts on recent episodes based on some of your reactions and more. So it was a very much a behind the scenes style Patreon app, and I have a Satchel Spectacular coming out soon, so look forward to that. And Instagram at Dame Galley. Emerson Collins, thank you for this 9-hour episode.
Always a joy. I love it so much.
Guys, I hope you're all doing okay, and we will chat with you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you.